This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter, at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Nothing but the blue moon. Sky so dark. As I reach out, God, I am alone. Looking up, the sky shimmers
Well, happy Thursday, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Kyle. I'm joined tonight by Shannon, the lovely Shannon Q.
Hi,
how are you, Shannon?
I'm good. I'm taking over. I took over the title screen. Everything's
you
purple.
Did.
I'm happy.
You did. And if you heard in the very beginning, people were commenting in the chat about that song. That is called Q-spiracy. It will be featured on Shannon's when Shannon joins us for the talks with the conspiracy people like Rand Campbell. He's the first one coming up, so get excited for that. She's taking over.
Hey. That's right. I'm the internet.
Let's say hello.
That's what
happened. Let's say hello to the man from the Atheist Republic, Armin. How's it going, sir?
Hi. Thank you for having me. By the way, I see Genetically Modified Skeptic. Drew is in the live chat. I also see Christy in the live chat. So some really good people. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Let me see who else
I
can
Drew.
Who else I recognize.
There's some good people, and then there's also Drew.
I sparkles.
Drew.
Oh, I know we were talking.
Hey, German. Oh, this is great. We have a celebrity in the live chat. By the way, did you guys see the on Genetically Modified Skeptic? Did you see on his YouTube channel the video that he just posted of our trip to Israel, to Palestine?
Yeah, I not watched did.
Oh, there, you guys yeah, they were watched it.
It was. Yeah, I did. It was, wow, it was fascinating.
Skeptic is in the live chat. You guys have some really good people in your live stream.
We have the best. We have the best live live chat on YouTube, hands down. We're very proud of our live people. Let's jump right into it. Shannon, do you want to kind of give an intro to some of the things we're going to be talking about, and then we can just dive right in? I have no announcements that I'm going to do. We can just dive straight in.
Nothing to say. All right. So this is Armin from the Atheist Republic. Obviously, he was kind enough to join us today. Armin and I have talked before. Armin, I always enjoy chatting with Armin, and he recently, one of the reasons that I reached out to him is that he was recently deplatformed. He was going to speak at a university in Calgary, and it was relatively near to the tragedy that happened in Christchurch in New Zealand. And as a reaction to that, because of the topic of conversation that Armin was going to be covered in the talk that was to happen, that talk was canceled. So I wanted to cover that a little bit. And I also wanted to kind of talk about the Atheist Republic and his recent trip to Palestine and Israel and some of the directions that Atheist Republic is taking. So we have a lot of ground to cover tonight. So I'll let Armin introduce himself and just talk a little bit briefly about who you are and what you do for anybody who's crazy enough not to be familiar with you.
Oh, no, you're being too generous. Well, I mean, okay, so just really quickly, founder of Atheist Republic, also the author of the book Why There Is No God. And also a co-host on the podcast, Secular Jihadist. That's all you need to know.
You also are the person who founded the largest atheist social media network. And I'm not sure if I'm using the right word to describe it, but essentially the largest kind of atheist institution in the world. You have, what is it, 5 million members now on
it's Facebook 2,100,000, but yeah, not including Instagram, Twitter, and our newsletter subscribers. But yeah, we just recently beat our atheism on Reddit, so we are now the world's largest atheist community.
Oh, wow.
In the world.
Yeah,
that's excellent.
That's fantastic. Awesome. Okay. So I'm going to kind of get right into it because I want to be respectful of your time. So
keep this as long as we can. This is fun. This is fun. So
okay.
Go ahead.
Great. Yeah. Armin, you're such a great conversation partner always. You're always so honest in dialogues. So essentially you were supposed to be speaking at a university in Calgary, and it was already pre-booked and arranged. I was familiar with the fact that it was happening because my boyfriend, Paul, who runs a channel called Apologia. Yes, because he came to the other talk that you did at the Atheist Society. He was supposed to go, and not only was supposed to go, was actually supposed to be the person that was going to be filming that. So I kind of had a little bit of a play-by-play and was getting incredibly frustrated with the situation and what was going on and some of the background. So I was hoping that you might be able to kind of give us a clear picture of exactly what happened in that situation, and then we can go from there.
Well, before I do, first, let's give credit where credit is due. It was the Atheist Society of Calgary that invited me and also paid for my travel and all the expenses. And they were so, so kind and so nice to me. So Atheist Society of Calgary, they booked the venue. They managed everything. They invited people to come. And they booked two venues, one in a university and one in a private area later in the afternoon. And the university one was canceled again because of the Christchurch, the terrorist attack in New Zealand. So it was canceled, which was absolutely ridiculous. But I'm not very upset about it because, you know, every time these things happen, you get a lot more exposure than you originally planned. So I really don't understand what the plan here is. Like, is it, they thinking like, okay, these ideas are dangerous, we need to silence it, and have they not seen how this plays out every time they do this? Because we got a lot more media attention. We got TV, you know, we got radio. We got so many reporters reaching out to me trying to get an interview about what happened. And, you know, it got Aces Republic got a lot more attention because of what they did. Aces Society of Calgary got a lot more attention because of what they did. And to be fair to the university itself, this was not a decision, apparently. Like, the president of the university came out and said this was the wrong decision after. And they opened an invitation for me to go back there and speak. This was the first time I've seen, like, such a major correction of a decision that was made from a top official in a university, right? They said that this was a response to the attacks in New Zealand, but this is not what a university should. A university should support, you know, dialogue and more speech. So this was the wrong decision to make. So the person that we got the email from was the interfaith, you know, chaplain.
And like chaplain? What they call it.
Yeah, something that decided to cancel it. But the president himself said this was the wrong decision. But again, it just doesn't make sense. Imagine, like, after every terrorist attack, Islamic terrorist attack, if you disinvited all imams or all Muslim speakers, because this is not the right time, right? Imagine every time there's a terrorist attack somewhere in the world, an Islamic one, all Muslim speakers at every university get deplatformed because it's just too close to an Islamic terrorist attack. I mean, I wouldn't support that. I'm like, well, these imams have nothing to do with the attack. What the hell has got to do with one has to do with the other? So this was as ridiculous as that. One thing I want to mention, just to be fair, is that a lot of Muslims came and supported me as well. Like they said, I want to also mention there are a lot of Muslims that very much disagree with a lot of what I had to say, but they said, well, this is bullshit. What the hell does the terrorist attack have to do with you know, deplatforming army speech? So credit to the Muslims that said this as well.
Do you mind if I ask what exactly the topic of the speech was going to be that you would set out initially?
Well, the topic was going to be, I mean, and I don't know if Drew is still in the live chat, it was supposed to be about the, you know, reforming Islam versus abandoning Islam. And Drew did an amazing summary video on that on his channel, Genetically Modified Skeptic. Go check that out. But I changed the topic based on the deplatforming, and I tried to talk to you about how to address Islam and how, you know, at a time when in the face of such oppression and mistreatment of Muslims around the world, how do you deal with Islam and how do you talk about Islam and what is the agenda of people that use terror attacks on Muslims to push their agenda, right? Like, one thing I pointed out during the speech was the fact that as Atheist Republic, as a group that we are constantly are told that we are anti-Muslim bigots, or I was recently called a diet Nazi and stuff like that. Even though as an atheist group, we constantly speak on behalf of Muslims when they are actually mistreated, right? We do that all the time. And we do that especially when Muslims are being attacked and there's not that many Muslims even are talking about it. You know, for example, when Muslims are being oppressed by China on such a scale that I'm to this day, I'm still confused about the lack of attention that this story is getting. It is getting some attention, but nothing compared to what you would expect. I mean, they're like, for example, China has put more than, you know, I don't know exactly if it's more, around 1 million Muslims in concentration camps, right? And when we talking about the crimes against Muslims in Yemen, in civilians in Yemen, something done by both Saudi Arabia and Iran, and mostly by Saudi Arabia, but also supported by countries like United States, the UK, you know, Greece, Germany. This is something that we constantly talk about, and we constantly try to you know, we beg people to pay more attention to these things. And those are some of our least popular videos. Like, it doesn't get any traction because not that many people are interested in that, even though these are the greatest human rights violations of our time. We talk about these things, and not even Muslims are talking about it. I mean, some to the credit, I do see some Muslims talking about it, but on a per capita basis, we as atheists are talking about it more than the Muslim community is, right? The Muslim community is more interested in talking about what happens to Palestinians. And also the far leftists are only interested in Muslims being oppressed when it's done by a white supremacist. Because that feels that, you know, to me, that suggests that it's not the Muslims that they're interested in. It's not protecting Muslims that they're interested in. It's the fact that they didn't, the people that accuse us of being white supremacists, the fact that they didn't care about China, the fact that they didn't make a single mention of the crimes committed against Muslims in Yemen. But all of a sudden, they are all yelling and calling us white supremacists and blaming us for the attack in New Zealand. Once we find out that the criminal here was a white supremacist, the fact that shows to me that this has nothing to do with them being guardians of minorities. This is a strong indication that this is basically them, you know, making a political move here, and this is them becoming more relevant because it was more about being anti. You know, becoming more relevant. These are people that want white supremacy to be bigger than it actually is, because the greater white supremacy is, the more relevant they are.
Right. So do you think that initially, I always worry about these types of knee-jerk reactions when it comes to having greater conversations, because I feel as though conversations are incredibly underrated and are one of the most important things that we can have, not just be with people that we agree with, but especially with people that we don't. So when something like this happens and the knee-jerk reaction is somebody is criticizing Islam as a faith, we're afraid that that's bad optics for us. Do you feel as though that sends a message that the perception is that criticism of Islam or any faith can be conflated in some way with overall racism or hate propagating, because people can't seem to compartmentalize the differentiation? Or do you think that it's just that they're afraid that it might have an overlap? What do you think it is?
Well, I think that not criticizing Islam because these people might get hurt is actually the bigotry. I mean, I think Majid Nawaz coined the term bigotry of lower expectations, because basically if you criticize bad ideas but hold it back when it comes to Muslim, what does that say about your views on Muslims? That they can't take feedback on their ideas, that they can't take just us disagreeing with what their religion, like, how low must you think of an entire group of people that you think, all bad ideas are up for, you know, disagreeing and fighting against, and for ridiculing, even ridiculing and mocking, you can make cartoons about other bad ideas, but this is just too much. These people, you're treating them like children, basically. But go on, sorry.
I was just going to say, I'm not sure that that's necessarily what the motivations are. I mean, this is just speculation, but I think a lot of the motivations may be, and I don't think that they're sound, that if they allow somebody to come in and criticize Muslims, that's going to be conflated with hating Muslims or perceived as hating Muslims, even though it isn't. It's just fair criticism of something that deserves to be criticized. And because something horrible has just happened to Muslims, they fear that if they platform somebody who's critical, that criticism is going to be seen as adding to existing hate, which is an issue because they can't compartmentalize. Did I articulate that a little bit better?
Right. Yeah, but you did. But it's, I mean, you're trying to, that's not your view.
No,
I'm
spitballing about against what the motivations might be when these types of things happen. Because if we can't understand what the motivations that people have for doing
you're
these things are,
them.
Then we, right, yeah, because if we don't understand what their motivations are, then we can't effectively counter them when these types of things happen. We need strategies, and we need to know what's going on in order for strategies to be effective.
So what you describe is the best that we could hope from them, even though it's completely wrong because it's actually the other way around, yeah. Right? But right. Given my experience with a situation like, you know, Christchurch, so the best that you could hope from these group of people is that they actually think that they're protecting minorities, but they have the wrong view of it. And I will tell you why even that is wrong, even though that's the best, because the intentions are actually good in that situation. Right.
Sure.
But my experience is that for most of these people, not on the left, by the way, I'm talking about the far left. OK, because most of the left is saying, most of the right is also saying we shouldn't talk about the entire left as if, as if they're all the far left. And we shouldn't talk about the right as if they're all the far right. Right. So but my experience with people on this, the far left, is that I genuinely question if the intentions are actually even protecting minorities. I think the intention might just be becoming more relevant, even if that makes it, even if the cost to that is to grow white supremacy and grow bigotry. That does it's fine because that will make them more relevant, right? But as far as the people that you're steelmanning, like the best. Of them mm-hmm. that are actually thinking that they're protecting minorities, I do think they're wrong, even though they have good intentions, because it's actually the other way around. I mean, this was predicted by people like Sam Harris years ago, that if we're not having these conversations, the people that are going to have the monopoly over the truth are going to be the people that are going to try to use the fact that they are the only people that are mentioning the truth as a signal to the people that discover the truth that their hatred towards a certain group of people is justified. Right? If you don't hear these things about certain ideas and you're completely living in a bubble, and then one day you discover that, oh, maybe the truth was being hidden from you, and you go out and try to discover the people that were that aren't hiding the truth from you. And if those people that you discover that aren't hiding the truth, if they're only the white supremacists, then you have given them more legitimacy and more authority, because you think, well, these people are right, have been right about Islam, something that other people have been hiding from me. So they probably are right about other things that they're saying, and maybe I should take them more seriously on everything else they're saying. This was it's just interesting because this was predicted many years ago by Sam Harris, and when he predicted this, people accused him of actually saying that white supremacists are then right. He wasn't saying that. He was warning about you giving them the legitimacy that they so crave, right? The fact is that
if you silence everybody else and they're the only ones who are allowed to criticize, then people who are really open to hearing those criticisms, that's their only avenue to take. And they're not going to hear it from somebody who is kind and empathetic and has best interest and wants to talk about what the next steps are and what a better way to combat it is. They're only going to hear it from people who are using it in order to pivot towards, and thus you should hate these people.
See, this is what I tell Muslims, right? I say you would want the people that hate Islam and talk shit against Islam, you want those people to be us, okay? Because when people are going out and looking for shit on Islam, you want the people that are shitting on Islam to be the people that will also defend your rights. Okay? You should introduce people that hate Islam to us, because we will challenge your ideas, but we will also defend you when other people are challenging your rights. I say to Muslims, it's better to be offended than to be discriminated against. All right. So tolerate us offending you. Tolerate us shitting on your religion and on Muhammad and everything else that you hold sacred. Because when it comes to defending your speech, defending your right to practice your religion, even though it's a very shitty religion, we will be there with you and protecting you on those rights. You want us to be you want us to have the platform when it comes to shitting on Islam. You should take away the platform from the white supremacists and give it to us.
That's actually funny. That's interesting. I actually hadn't looked at it that way. So that's something for me to mull over. So that's fascinating. Yeah. So I feel as though we've kind of litigated what happened there. You also did get to have a really good talk with the Atheist Society of Calgary. I've gone to many events there. Well, not many, actually. I've only been to a couple events there when I traveled to Calgary. And they're fantastic. They're an incredibly active society. So I appreciate you giving them the credit that they deserve for having you in, because I know that it's not something that they took lightly. But I know that for a fact.
Can I also give credit to a group of mm-hmm. people? I also want to mention that we have a lot of the people in the atheist community, when they want to talk about Islam, they seem to be waiting for permission from the far left to be able to finally talk about Islam. I say, given that these people's careers depends on us being actual bigots, I don't see that much hope in that, right? So I'm saying we don't even need to wait for, like, what? Who are we trying to convince? These people, I have had very little success rate with them. I have had much mm-hmm. better success rate with Muslims than with the far left, okay? And I have managed to convince, and I know a lot of Muslims won't agree with this, but I have managed to change the opinions of a lot of Muslims themselves. Even so, a lot of Muslims leave Islam. We know the ex-Muslim movement is growing, but there's a smaller win that we have achieved on a much bigger scale, is that a lot of Muslims that hate what we have to say about Islam have at least accepted that it's okay for us to do so. Okay?
Interesting.
This has worked very well. And this is the example I want to put this example out there, because this is the argument that I use to most Muslims that has worked the fastest, right? And so feel free to use this if you ever want to convince a Muslim that why hating on Islam is not a personal attack on Muslims. And you have to understand, this is the meme, even though Islam is ridiculous, the meme of Islam is not ridiculous at all. And it's a very, very powerful meme, and it's very strategic the way it's structured, right? And that's why it has survived, and that's why it has spread so fast, right? So you don't underestimate it. And the strategy, the fact that when ideas can't survive logical analysis, the best way for the idea to survive is to make that idea make it as part of someone's identity, so that the attack on the identity will become an attack on an entire group of people, right? So it doesn't matter if it makes much sense or not. You don't criticize it, because then you're attacking an entire group of people. That's a very clever strategy. It's a very clever defense mechanism. And the challenge for us is, even before criticizing Islam, is try to separate the understanding that this is the idea from the identity, right? And the way to do that is to do a counterexample on atheism. So the example I give is this. I tell Muslims, like, imagine a Muslim that hates atheism. And usually a lot of, depending on the Muslim you're talking to, some of them might say like, well, I don't hate atheism. But if they try to change the conversation like that, say like, I'm not talking about you. I'm just talking about a Muslim that hates atheism. Okay. This is my example. But this person hates atheism, not because she hates atheists, but because she cares for atheists and she worries that they're going to go to hell. She genuinely is concerned for atheists, and she thinks, she's worried for them, she loves them, and she's trying to save them. So she hates atheism not because she hates atheists. She hates atheism because of her love for atheists and because of her care for atheists, right? And that example shows how somebody could hate atheists not because she hates atheists, but because of her love for atheists. So you're giving an example of how it's possible to hate an idea without hating the people, right? And so if you can understand that, then can you understand that even if, let's say we're wrong, let's say we are critics of Islam and we hate Islam and we are wrong and you're right. Islam, you're right and we're wrong. Islam is fantastic. It's the best thing ever. And we're absolutely wrong about it. but at least try to understand that our intentions might be that we hate Islam because we care for Muslims and we think Muslims are the main victims of Islam. And we might be completely wrong about that. We're being so ridiculous about even thinking that. But even if we're wrong about that, can you at least appreciate that our hatred for Islam does not come from our hatred for Muslims? And that example usually works for me. So feel free to use it if you ever want to make that point.
So do you feel that maybe there's not as many atheist communicators, there's more talking about Christianity or, you know, Mormonism or Jehovah's Witnesses than there are talking about atheism? Well, because one of the things that I see is you tend to speak about the religion that you yourself deconverted from because that's what you know the most about. So you'd almost have to do a lot of research in order to be able to provide an effective counter.
No. Or, okay, I'm an ex-Muslim, but it's very obvious to me that Judaism is absolutely ridiculous and barbaric and backwards.
Right. I think they're all crazy too. But in order to provide an effective counter, you have to do more than just think, I disagree with this. If somebody is sophisticated enough to be a counter-apologist, or an apologist, I should say, and you're a counter-apologist, if you want to have an effective counter-argument, you need to make sure that it's not meticulous. Really.
I don't think so.
Why not?
No, I don't think so. Because imagine if somebody came and told you that they think Harry Potter is real. It's based on real history, okay?
Is it not?
And you want to tell them that, okay, that's ridiculous.
Mine.
And you wanted to tell them that's ridiculous. But then they tell you, well, do you know what Harry's wand was made of? Do you know all the detail between Voldemort's childhood? Do you know all the details about this? Do you know the statue that was at this house, at this school? Did you know the history behind why that was built in this in Hogwarts and why it was at this specific location? And you say, no, I don't know any of that. And then they tell you, well, if you don't know the details about, how could you be so arrogant to tell me that Harry Potter is not real if you don't know the details of all this, of everything in the universe? You don't, I think that if they try to take you down that rabbit hole, then you already lost the main point.
But here's the thing though, Armin, what if you're trying to convince them to not believe Harry Potter is real? If you're trying to convince them and they already believe it, you need to be able to counter the things they bring up. And if you don't know anything about what they brought up, they believe it's true. Is it? Okay, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm just saying it's very, you don't need to be an Islamic scholar to know that if you can't show me an evidence for a prophet going on a horse wing and going to heaven, like... where's the evidence for that? That's all you need to ask, honestly. It's very easy. I mean, the only reason
why... What if they say it's allegory?
Well, wait, though. He actually cleaved the moon in half, right? That's the story.
Yeah,
that's in the Quran, too. So why does nobody notice that all around the world? I mean, okay, but... I try to study Islam and Christianity and Judaism and sometime hopefully Hinduism as well, because as I find it interesting, okay, because I think even though they're not true, it tells you a lot about the human mind and what we need as humans. Why did we make up these stories? To me, it's very interesting, right? But when it comes to pointing out that these are nonsense, you don't need any of that. I just study it because it's just fascinating. And I think you could get... the reason why you study these religions is because you could get other useful information out of it. Not because you need it to counter religious, you know, the trick, they take you into that rabbit hole as a trick. You shouldn't fall for that. You should always step one, you know, when
who
they
are
try
they,
to
who
take
are
you
they tricking,
down to the,
though?
All the complexity. No, okay. So they try
they're
to,
trying to hold
okay,
the
so
belief.
Right.
And I'm trying to say you shouldn't hold that belief.
Right.
How do I effectively counter it without knowing the nuances of the belief?
Okay, so the trick is that they try to point to all the complexity of their faith, whether it's Christianity, Judaism, or Islam. They show you libraries of scholars, of history, of people that analyze the faith in such great detail. I mean, if you want to go through that, you need like 100 lifetimes to be able to analyze all that, right? Yeah, you won't be able to. They try to point to that to impress you. Okay, to impress you, to be like, this can't be bullshit if we have this much written on it, if we have this much analysis on it, right? Greater minds than you have been writing about this for hundreds of years. Who are you to come tell me this is all bullshit, right? But then the point, you have to point to them that if that's their standard, then Islam is not true because Christianity has more books than you do, right? if Christians want to point to their scholarly work, well, based on that argument, Christianity is not true because Jews have been writing about their religion for longer. Zoroastrians mm-hmm. have their book, many books, before the Muslims burned all of them. Right? Hinduism, what do you have to say about Hinduism? They have way longer history than all of you, and they have way more books than all of you. Like, is that really your standard? Because you're going to lose that argument. I'm almost just saying, just step, instead of diving, like playing their game, step back and see what they're saying. And it's usually something very simple and very stupid.
So you think
it doesn't take a genius to realize this is all baseless.
I'm an atheist, so I'm certainly not a genius. So I said I'm an atheist and I'm certainly not a genius. So I think I would agree with you on that part. But I'm also interested in what compels people to believe something and what compels people to change their mind. That's something that's always fascinated me. And
that's a very good question. That's a very good question. And if you notice, the people that come up with excuses for religion, they are the few that know all these details, right? And they try to make it tell you that all of these details is why the religion is true. But if you're asking that question, why people believe these things, most of them don't know any of this. Most Muslims don't know much about Islam. Most Christians don't know much about Christianity. Most believing Jews don't know much about Judaism. So the question that you're asking, what makes people believe these things, does not lead, the answer to that doesn't lead you to what the people that are trying to make excuses for the religion, it doesn't go to all those books and all the history and all the, you know, scholarly work. That's not the answer, because most of them don't know that. That's a good question to ask, Shannon. And when you answer that question, you realize that you're wasting your time if you're studying these religions for being able to, you know, counter them. I mean, I don't think it's a waste of time completely, because I'm telling you, you could get a lot of other points out of studying these religions other than trying to counter them. You don't need to study them to counter them. I studied them for a different reason. But once you actually study the average believer, then you notice that studying these religions in detail is not what you need to counter them. There's other reasons why people believe in these things.
So can you most take of it a is more epistemological? That's fair, and community based, and they're interwoven into something that's part of their intrinsic identity. So when you're approaching somebody, do you take more of an epistemological approach of getting them to analyze why they believe what they do, external of the textual component? Do you sort of get them to do some introspection regarding how they come to
depends
believe?
On the person. Depends on the person.
Okay, so you do it. That's fair. That's actually, I respect that, because that's very true.
Yeah. Please go ahead. You first have to get to know the person you're talking to.
Yeah, which is difficult. Well, on these types of platforms, it's difficult. So looking for a strategy, because right now I'm not talking to somebody except for you, but there's people listening to us. So it's very important to try to look at a way that you can have a strategy where you can affect that kind of dissonance in somebody's mind. You can elicit that sort of curiosity that makes them maybe delve deeper or do that introspection. And it's not the same for everybody, which is why I think multiple approaches are necessary, because everybody's going to be compelled by something different. But I find it really intriguing and valuable to have these sorts of interactions with people who are kind of, you know, in the trenches like I am, having these conversations about what they found effective and why.
This is why there's so many of us, right? This is why you have genetically modified skeptic, you have the cosmic skeptic, you have the nut, and you have the non sequitur show, you have Nightmare Fuel, you have so many different shows, and because different people respond to different type of content, right? So you know, this is why you produce what you see is resonating with your community, and you just worry about the other kind of people that don't for another channel to deal with the people that you're not resonating with. But one thing, like, I can tell you,
collaborations are important, I think.
Yeah, exactly. This and another thing that I want to point to is that one thing that I think we are missing a lot of content to is a lot of us, not all of us, okay, a lot of us have come to the conclusion that religion is nonsense because there was no evidence to believe in it, right? The problem is that most people in the world don't think like that, right? Most, you know, okay, this is something I mentioned in Calgary, and it's going to come off like an insult, but it's not an insult, mm-hmm. and I will clarify after I mention, okay? Again, this is not an insult. I will clarify, okay? Most people are stupid, okay? Mm-hmm. Intelligence is not very common, right? Right? And that sounds like an insult, but I don't think this is an insult, and I want to change the way people look at ignorant people, not ignorant, stupid people, right? I'm not talking about lack of information. I'm talking about the capacity to think logically, okay? Because, and I'm on purpose using the word stupid, because that's what that's the word people use as an insult, okay? Right. But if you think about it, if somebody can't use their legs properly, okay, we sympathize with them and we try to help them if somebody can't walk. If somebody can't use their eyes and they're blind, we sympathize with them and we try to help them. But if somebody can't use their brain properly, we don't seem to sympathize with them. In fact, we see them as inferior and we shame them and we see them as unworthy of even talking to. They're just stupid. Which is strange to me, because I would think that one of the most important, you know, things we need to survive in this world is to be able to think logically. And the people that are not able to think logically, to me, seem that they deserve more sympathy than, you know, that's a handicap, right? That's a handicap that deserves our sympathy. And these people are that need to be taken care of, to be cared for. They deserve our help rather than our disdain or shame, right? It seems to me like within intellectual circles, most of the content that is produced is mostly for other intellectual people. And we just think that we need to just make this world, you know, the people always comment, and, you know, you see in Facebook comment sections or other places, oh, why can't people just smarten up? Why are these people have to be this stupid? Why can't people just be smarter? Well, I mean, if you're waiting for people to be smarter, then you're going to be waiting forever, right? It's not going to happen. Right, we can't just make this we're in this together. We can't just make this planet just work for smart people. We have to somehow make it work for everybody, including the people that can't even appreciate that who they need to thank for the world becoming better. Even those people deserve to be happy. Okay, you know, so even though intelligence is not very common, there is another thing that is a force for good on average, again, all of this is flawed, that we can appeal to that usually produces more positive results than negative, right? And the other thing that we could appeal to that is not people's intelligence, that is way more common, is sympathy. Because even though intelligence is not very common, I think sympathy is very common, right? And I give you an example by what I mean. And again, this goes against myself because I wrote a book called Why There Is No God, and it became a bestseller. And it basically counters the logical argument, the arguments people make for the existence of a God. But I can tell you that that's not what most people, that's not how most people, why most people believe in God. That's not why, you know, most people don't believe in God because they found logical reasons for existence of God. Most people believe in God for emotional reasons. So I'm saying something that goes against the book that I wrote. I was so tired of making those arguments that I just turned it into a book. So every time somebody asks me, I just send them a PDF. I don't talk to them. I'm like, hey, I wrote about this, okay? So I'm not going to repeat myself a million times. But the example I want to give you is that I mentioned this to Drew in Israel as well. I was talking to a person, a Christian, and I was trying to understand. So they were saying the Bible, everything in the Bible is true, and I was asking them why, and they said, well, because it's from God. And they were like, okay, how do you know God is true? And they mentioned that, well, because it says so in the Bible. And we understand, okay, yeah, that's circular reasoning, okay? But I spent a lot of time trying to explain to this person why circular reasoning doesn't work, right? I tried to come up with examples. I tried to be very patient with them. And it didn't go anywhere. It just didn't work. They couldn't understand why this logic doesn't work. It seems very simple to you and I, but to them, it just didn't go through no matter how I explained it, right? For why you can't, I use a napkin argument. But then I tried something else. I said, okay, listen. Let's say you're right, I'm wrong. Okay? You're right, I'm wrong. You got the answer. I didn't get the answer. Maybe I'm just blind. I'm just not looking in the right direction. I'm trying, but I'm just not seeing it, right? Do you think I deserve to burn forever for that? And they had a hard time agreeing with that. They could, you know, even though this person left still a Christian, that second argument resonated with them. They could understand what point I was trying to make, right? They could understand why it seems problematic that somebody will burn forever just because they got the wrong answer. Why was that second argument easier to convey? Because they had a sense of fairness, right? They didn't have that much logic, but they could see when something was unfair, they recognized that, right? I think that appealing to people's sense of sympathy for appealing to a mass or a bigger audience might work. But go on, sorry, Kyle.
I was just going to say, to that point, it's interesting because in some of the discussions that we've had on this channel, I can think of about four times off the top of my head, one that really sticks out where I've asked that very same question, that if the mere fact of disbelief or not being convinced of something warrants being tortured for eternity. And each time in those instances, they couldn't answer it. And I would push and say, you know, just say if it's reasonable. Do you consider it reasonable that be a punishment for that offense? And none of them said that was a reasonable thing to expect that somebody would. So I think even faced in that fact, knowing that the book says this is how it is and they're supposed to follow that book, and you would expect the answer to be, well, yes, if you don't believe, then it is reasonable to expect that you would burn. But none of them could say that with any kind of, easy. They all struggled with it, and I find that interesting.
And it depends on who you're talking to, because if you don't understand the faith you're talking to, like I've used that argument before with someone who has a nihilistic conceptualization of hell, So that's not a compelling argument for them because I didn't pay attention to who I was talking to. There's somebody who is an annihilationist. They essentially believe that separation from God, that just means if you're an atheist, you just stop existing like you would anyway, but they get to be, that's their realization of hell. So that's the way that they reconcile that dissonance. So if you don't really take the steps to understand, because belief is piecemeal. People go to the cafeteria and take what makes sense to them and they keep that. And the rest of it is allegory or whatever, right? Like most people take what they need out of their faith and put that inside them. And the rest of it, they find a way to disassociate with, excuse, or make excuses for, or they ignore. But you need to know which pieces they took in order to be able to effectively have those conversations. So if you're just having a conversation with a generic Christian and you use that hell argument, it may be effective 9 times out of 10, but there's one time they're going to be like, you'll just stop existing. That's what you're going to do anyway. So you need to build a relationship in that situation if that's your tactic, to be fair.
Right. So another thing to point out is that what are you trying to achieve when you're talking to believers, right? Because other than just convincing them out of their faith, there's another smaller step that we could take. And again, if you go look at the video that Drew just released on Genetically Modified Skeptic, he doesn't ask them, why are you a believer, right? He's asking them, what are your thoughts on atheists, right? So yeah. We could get a lot out of believers when it comes to their sense of sympathy, right? Because even if you have only a little to play with when it comes to people abandoning their faith using your sense of sympathy, the bigger scale win that we could get with people's sense of sympathy is accepting of atheists, right? We could make a lot of progress by normalizing atheism, by making believers, even if they stay believers, to accept atheists as their neighbors, as their friends.
And to be willing to have conversations.
To be willing to have conversations. And even if they find it, if they don't want to have conversations, to be at least be okay with other people having these conversations, right? Like if you're right? So that's a smaller win that I'll take. Like, here's a lot of people say like, oh, you shouldn't be offended. I don't say that. It's like, it's fine. Be offended. But also understand that you have full control over what you're exposed to. Just don't demand us to change what we say based on what you're offended. There's a difference between, oh, I'm offended, so I'm going to unsubscribe, or I'm offended, so you should stop making this content, right? Like, that's the difference that we know. Okay, you're offended. It's fine. Don't read this book. Don't watch this YouTube video. Don't follow this page. It's very easy, right? Even if we could show that much of a difference, rather than like, oh, if Atheist Republic is completely banned in Pakistan right now, apparently. That was the number one country that our fan base came from, by the way. Now we're completely banned in Pakistan. So those are the things that we want to cut. Yeah. Now number one is United States, but it used to be number one, what used to be Pakistan. But
that's fascinating.
So we lost a lot from that. But if we could just get
and
that,
those
like
people
hey.
Lost those connections. Wow. That's a story in and of itself. All of those people that probably had that as their only source of connection with people who were like-minded in some sort of anonymity that kept them safe have lost that. Yeah. That's tragic. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. But if we could convince more Muslims, here's the level of acceptance that we're pushing for. We don't want, you know, a lot of religious people say like, hey, I have atheist friends. I like atheists. I like the ones that don't shit on my religion, right? I like the ones that are not mocking and ridiculing.
Don't challenge
me. No. That's not, we don't want a condition for your acceptance, right? Because if we had the same condition for you, then your religion will be completely banned. Because have you read your books? have you read how the Quran speaks about atheists? Have you read how the Bible speaks and, you know, the Old Testament speaks about the people that are not part of you? So don't even try to introduce that condition. We don't want you, I accept atheists that keep it to themselves. We will be shitting on your religion from morning till night. And you, we want you to accept that. We want the religious people that say that, oh, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Christian, I have atheist friends that hate Islam, and they won't shut up about it. I have atheist friends that hate Christianity and won't shut up about it, and they're still my friend, right? That's the level of acceptance that we want.
Interesting. So you want people...
Oh, go ahead. There needs to be a shirt. I was just going to say that needs to be a shirt. We will shit on your religion day and night. Atheist Republic.
We tolerate you with your freaking books. Like, we have Muslim friends and Christian friends, and you are you consider a book holy that advocates for us being tortured forever. So if we're tolerating you as a friend when you're endorsing that book, there's not that. I mean, that's torture. Come on, like that's you. You are endorsing books that wants us beheaded, even though you don't agree with that. You're tolerating those books. You're endorsing it. So we are considering you our friends, even though you're endorsing that kind of nonsense. So we just talking shit about your religion. Come on, that's not too much to ask. That is not too much to ask.
That's a very good point. I had a question sort of to that end. What was it that made you – what was it that brought doubt into your story? Like, what made you start to question your faith?
Oh, my God. How much time do you have? you want the short version or the long version? Short version or long version?
Short version so we can get to your political stuff, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Short version is started with studying the history of religion because when I was a Muslim, I was very I couldn't understand why all these other people are going to go to hell. So I wanted to understand the nature of other religions. So I started studying the history of religion, and the more I studied the history of religion, the more I was convinced that this all seems like it was just all made up. So history, and also in Iran, evolution is taught in school, and also the theories of how the first cell came. You know, I remember in school when they were studying biology, when they were telling us about the Miller experiment, I kept on looking around to see if anybody is as shocked as I am, right? Because when they were telling us that in school, I was looking at this, at my book. This is my biology textbook in Iran. I was like, well, if you could explain the first cell, then everything else could also be explained. Like, maybe there's an explanation for everything. Like, I was trying to look at it around and see if everybody is having a crisis like I was, or like we're realizing what's happening here.
Yeah. So the Miller-Urey experiment, they taught the Miller-Urey experiment where they made the first base amino acids in enclosed environment.
Okay, first they told us about
evolution. That was a point of just that. Fascinating to me because you were like, holy shit, they make amino acids, guys.
Because they first told us about evolution, and we're like, okay, fine, you have explanation for where all the animals came from, but what about the first cells? All right, and then they told us about the primordial soup and stuff, and like, okay, there might be an explanation for the first cell, but you can't get organic stuff out of non-organic stuff, right? And then they told us about the Miller experiment. I was like, okay, that's it. Like, what the hell? There could be. I was like, even if I keep going down this, what about this? What about that? I'm pretty sure I'm going to get to a point where they're going to be like, well, we don't know. But given that they have explanations for stuff that I thought they wouldn't have explanations for, there might also be explanations for those that we don't know. Like, where does God enter all of this, right? So, like, there might not be any room for God after if we could explain everything. So the Miller experience was the history was started my doubt, but the Miller experience was the final nail in the coffin, I think.
That's fascinating that they teach evolution in Iran. You wouldn't think that, or I mean, at least I wouldn't. You'd think they would because it's so religious, you know, it's so religious that it would be based.
I didn't even know,
so,
being before I came from left Iran, I didn't even know people were against religion. People were against evolution. Like, their religious people are against evolution.
Wow.
Like, that wasn't
hang out this channel more often.
No, wow. Like in Iran, I think you could compare it to the Catholic Church, right? A lot of people are surprised that the Catholic Church has no problem with evolution and the Big Bang Theory. So I think Iran's government is also, people are surprised that they don't have any issues with evolution. It's just God's way of creating things. In fact, I can tell you, you could come up with so many, so much bullshit about what the stuff actually means in the Quran about, like, Adam and Eve. There's so much to play with, and I think I did a very good job at coming up with a bullshit that sounds deep and intellectual like that. Because I remember telling our religion teacher that when I learned about the primordial soup, that I think this is what Noah's Ark is referring to. And my religion teacher was very impressed with this, because I said, like, look, they tell us the whole world was mostly water. And what does, that's Noah's, you know, story, mostly water. And they tell us about the first cell, which contains which started the DNA, which is the information for where all the animals come from. And what is Noah's Ark? Is Noah's Ark is a container with all the animals in there. So the Noah's Ark is basically a referral to the first cell, and all the animals in Noah's Ark is referring to the DNA, where all the information for all the animals eventually came from. And I like the Noah's
Ark. That's the most sophisticated Noah's Ark story I've ever heard. And I've heard all of them.
I came up with this when I was a kid.
And thank my God you landed teacher... on our sidearm and you'd be dangerous. I almost wish you hadn't said that, because I'm going to fucking hear it again.
Oh, yeah. You just gave some ammo to...
That's not the last time I'm going to hear that. And it's your fault. So just sit with that for a minute. Let that wash over you.
No, but I'm just saying, it's so easy to come up with this stuff. Like, look, it sounds profound, but it's just, you could just, if you write the core, the Bible, and we could do this with any story, right? You could do this with, like, Notre Dame stories. Like, you could come up with, you just have to look for stuff, and you could just make it relate to whatever you want. This is why some conspiracy theories sound very profound. As long as you have enough stories and media or whatever to work with, you will be able to connect anything with whatever you want and make it sound very profound.
It's fascinating to me that that's what, like, brought you out of it. That's a good question, pal.
All right. Politics.
Yeah, we have a limited amount of time. We want to get to super chat. So I noted a video and stuff that you were sharing on Twitter and Facebook that you guys are becoming a political movement now at the Atheist Republic. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit more about that and what your future plans are.
Please, yes, anybody that becomes a member of Atheist Republic or atheistrepublic.com will have a seat on our weekly meetings regarding how to we're coming up with a lot of plans on how to move forward with this. So go to atheistrepublic.com and become a member. And basically what we decided is that, okay, we made the world's biggest community of atheists in the world, but we got tired of playing defense, right? What are we doing? Like, we're saying people are attacking atheists and they're mistreating them and they're putting them in jail or killing them or, you know, putting them on watch lists and all that nonsense, or hunting them down or stuff like that. They make these kind, and there doesn't seem to be that much of an outcry on a global scale or any kind of a reaction to that. I say, you know, if these people, when Jews get attacked, there's a lot of advocacy and groups and organizations defending the Jews, as it should be. When Muslims are attacked, there are a lot of advocacy groups and organizations defending Muslims, as it should be. Same with Christians, right? When Christians are oppressed in Egypt, for example, there's a lot of churches around the world that support them. There doesn't seem to be that strong of an advocacy groups when ACS are attacked. There doesn't seem to be that strong of a backlash. And we said we are tired of just playing the defensive game. When ACS are under attack, we just try to provide them a community. We want to start going after the people that are threatening ACS. We want to make it a more of a political nightmare for people. Like when, for example, when the Malaysian deputy minister, when our consulate members in Kuala Lumpur were attacked, when he said that we need to hunt down the atheists, when the reaction to that was a fraction of what it would have been if any government official anywhere in the world had said we need to hunt down the Jews, we need to hunt down the Christians, or we need to hunt down the Muslims. Then we see this, there's a gap here. We see that there is not enough of a cost to mistreat atheists, and we want to make that cost greater. We want to go on the offense. We don't want to just protect atheists. We want to go after the people that are attacking the atheists. We want to go after the laws that are against atheists. We want to go after the organizations, the institutions, the countries, and the people that are going after the atheists. And we have a very specific way of doing this. We want to make a huge noise every time, and we want to make sure that there is an international backlash next time an atheist is attacked. But we need to grow, and we need to do this with the people that join us as members. We need to find enough resources to be able to do this. And we have a lot of plans on this. And we do have weekly meetings on every week with regards to what we're planning on doing. So we want to be very transparent about this. We're recording these meetings, and we put it on Atheist Republic's YouTube channel. We publish them there. So go check them out. And if you do want to be part of it, if you're tired of just complaining about religion, and you actually want to be, not just complain and be part of the solution as well, consider becoming a member at Atheist Republic.
Aren't you also essentially having almost like a democratically elected caucus, sort of like with representatives? Yeah,
It's a republic. We call ourselves an Atheist Republic. That's just not going to be a name, right? Right now, everything has been... No. We're not a democracy, we're a republic, so there are some standards that we have that are not up for negotiation or discussion. Mm-hmm. But the people that are execute the values and the ideas that we have are elected and are selected always by our community, whether if it's in our Facebook group or whether it's in any other groups. And now that we are a political movement, once we reach a certain amount of membership, we are going to have a council of experts, but we are also going to have a parliament. The council of experts is not going to be elected because it's going to be based on, qualifications and academic background. But the parliament is going to be elected based on by our members. And that goes through the way we have done everything for the past 15 years.
Fantastic. That's awesome. I can't wait to hear it. I have to say, I've really enjoyed talking to you. I always do. Oh,
thank you.
It's very difficult for me to find somebody where I can't get a word in edgewise. And that's always you, Mervyn. You always have so much. I never want to step over you because it's always interesting and I want to hear what you say, but I like talking to you.
I enjoy listening to you, so you're good.
No, I enjoy it. You're a guest here, and everybody listens to me flap my lips all the goddamn time. Don't worry about me. I can see Kyle twitching because there's somebody sent a super chat asking when the hell we're going to read the super chats. I saw that go by.
I was twitching. It was a funny story.
Thank you to the people. Thank you to the people that are using the super chat function. Like, honestly, you guys are making these kind of, every person that uses the super chat function in the live chat, you guys are making these kind of, content possible. So thank you so much for doing that.
Absolutely.
That's so true, because most of these are demonetized.
Shannon, I wasn't twitching. I was moving something to my. I have a storage unit because I'm moving apartments here coming up soon, and I was moving some stuff out there. And I was coming down the steps of my place, and my foot went out from under me, and I landed directly on my. Yeah, but what was funny is in the box that I was carrying out were some shoes. And when I landed, a boot literally flipped up in the air, and I saw it coming down on my forehead, and I didn't have anywhere that I could go. So it literally, I watched it come down directly on my, so yeah, my back's hurting from that. I'm trying to get used to that. Okay.
I'm sorry, Kyle. I thought that I was making you twitchy because I never shut up.
No, not at all. This has been fascinating. And we'll have to have you back. If you would like to,
you should hear Armin's full story one day. Armin's full story.
That's what I was getting ready to say. I'd love to have you back.
His mom deconversion story is intense.
Right.
I'm just saying.
So let's do that. So let's get you back and talk about that sometime. That'd be great. Okay. Kwiasa says Palestine things really going bad with Israel's Netanyahu winning fifth term. Sigh. Jude Austin, super chat with no message. Thank you. Johan Roderick says, can't stay for the stream. I have to go record a podcast, so here's my money. Thank you very much for the super chat, and I hope your podcast went well. Christy Santiago.
Hi, Christy.
Armin is my hero. I know. She's great. Armin is my hero. He nailed it again. The world needs more humans like Armin and his co-hosts. Ali, hashtag Atheist Republic fam. Love ya. Armin, Kyle, and Miss Q.
I love Allie, too.
Aww, love you.
And I love Allie.
Pragmatic Culture, who is a theist, he's got two. The next one's very interesting, but we'll start with this this first one. He says, don't know if this guy runs the Atheist Republic Twitter, but tell him thanks anyway for making memes so that it's easy for theists like me to dunk on them. Ooh. Like to respond to that?
No, you're welcome. We have had many believers. We have had many believers going after memes that they thought that were low hanging fruit, they became part of the Atheist Republic family because of every time they wanted to respond to a meme, and a lot of them eventually came for the memes and deconverted because of our members that were there in the comment section. So, and also thank you for commenting on our memes, which increases the engagement on our page and makes Facebook show us to a higher number of people. So thank you for introducing Atheist Republic to more people.
And here's the next one. Pragmatic Culture says, answer to the question, do you deserve to burn for disbelief? At the end of your life, that choice is up to you. You can acknowledge God in your last moments and be saved, but if you don't, even at that point, and the punishment is self-inflicted. Oh boy,
this sounds like an abusive boyfriend syndrome, like where it's hitting you and like this is your choice. You did this to yourself. I'm hitting you because I love you.
How many times have I told you not to do that? It makes me angry.
Pascal's
way. Why don't you listen?
So compelling. I just converted.
I know.
Pascal
wager. Everything so comes down to Pascal's wager. All of it.
Like God created. Imagine if like a parent said like the kids, right? Like didn't appreciate the parents. You're a dad. You're working so hard, and your kids are just so ungrateful, so ungrateful. They don't even acknowledge that you exist, right? Mm-hmm. And you did so much for them. You put food on the table for them. You did so many things for them. And they just don't recognize your your existence. So what's the most rational thing to do? You put them in the oven. You put the kids in the oven and you turn it on and you tell them that they did this to themselves. They did this to themselves.
What always like the
and you love them.
In your last moments, you can decide, you know, what you want to do. That's always what really threw me off, with religion is the fact that somebody can live as an atheist, a pretty decent life. You know, they have vices just like everybody else does. And their only like egregious thing that they've done is that they just weren't convinced of there being a God. And then you could take somebody that is a child predator or a murderer. And in the moments before they die, they can say a prayer and they get to go to heaven and spend eternity in heaven. But the decent person who just didn't believe, he has to be tortured for eternity. And that doesn't make any sense to me. Personally.
Yeah, so you have a get out of jail free card. But I don't, because involuntary to me, I was not compelled or convinced to believe that God exists.
Yeah.
You can be shitty and repent. Yeah, I can be fantastic and I'm fucked.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I said, people say, oh, religion gives you morality. I'm like, no, religion gives you a license to sin, because you could get away with anything when you have religion. Yeah. You could do whatever the fuck. It doesn't, like, people are like, oh, at least it shows people what's right and wrong. Like, no, it gives people the opportunity to do whatever wrong thing they want to do, and also gives them a way to not get punished for it. So, it's a license to sin.
That's why I find it so... That's so funny when you get the you just want to sin argument. When, like, when you're converting or deconverting, people are like, you deconverted because you just wanted to sin. I'm like, actually, now I understand that my sins are completely on me and only I feel the repercussions for them. You can sin all you want and you have absolution. You have a way out of your sins. I have to fucking wallow in them and face the repercussions and have to deal with the reality that these are my decisions and mine alone, and that they have general repercussions in my life that cannot be absolved after I'm dead.
To be fair to Islam and Judaism, this is something Christianity has got worse than those two. Like, Islam has a lot more shittier teachings than Christianity in some other aspects. But when it comes to the concept of sin, Christianity is the worst. Because at least in Islam, there's two types of sins. There's the sins against man and sins against God. So if you sin against God, you ask God for forgiveness and he'll forgive you. Except if you do shirk, which is unforgivable, having partners to God. But if you sin against man, you can't go ask God for forgiveness without having the person that you wronged forgive you first, right? So So in Islam, if you sin against man, you can't go directly to God. You have to go to the person that you've wronged, and you need their forgiveness to get rid of that sin. Yeah. So in Christianity, though,
person could prevent you from going to heaven, though. Like, you could do a minor sin against a dick, and that dick could be the reason you don't get to go to heaven, even though you're generally...
No, you go to heaven eventually. So if you're a Muslim, you will eventually go to heaven. Only non-Muslims will always stay they will always stay in hell. Oh. But as a Muslim, you'll go to hell for a period of time. You pay for the sins that were not forgiven. After you spend your time in hell, then you will graduate to heaven. Which always made me wonder, because if I was burned for thousands of years, I will have such a, like, my, I wouldn't be able to enjoy heaven. I would be burned in heaven. Yeah, I would have
that guy's wife that one time.
No, we even had a story about this guy that kept on making sure that all his sins, he made sure he had, like, no sins. He always made sure that he asked God for forgiveness, and he asked everybody around for forgiveness. But there was this one guy that he borrowed some money from, and he tried to pay it back. But he died before he could pay back the money. He went to his shop and he threw the coin under the door, but that guy was already dead. So he had a dream that he's in hell and the coin were hot and it was on his skin because he didn't pay the man back before he died, right? So I was like, I mean, he tried. What the hell?
That's psychological trauma, too. Oh, my God. All that psychological trauma that you would feel trying to go through the motions of getting that absolution and worried, like, what if I die tomorrow? I'm going to go to hell. I'm so close. It's like three installments away.
If I was in heaven as a Muslim, and my parents were still in hell, I really don't understand how you would be able to enjoy heaven like that. They tell us we ask our teachers, like, how could I enjoy heaven if my parents are, like, screaming in pain in hell? They say that when you go to heaven, you understand the logic of this thing so well that not only you would be okay with it, there's actually a special observatory area that you go. There's a special part of heaven where you get to go watch the people in hell and you will enjoy them burning in hell because you know that you know how much they deserve it. Yeah, that's fucked up.
Brian G says, any god that would burn anyone for unbelieving is a piece of shit asshole god that deserves neither love nor worship. I would agree. Vikram Parahu sent a super chat with no message. So thank you for that. Kwiasa, refutation. In a world dominated by an omnipresent, omniscient, and omnipotent being, the responsibility of every outcome solely falls onto the being that holds all of those traits. Vikram Parahu, do you plan on having a talk in Vancouver anytime soon, Armin?
If anybody, okay, so I'm shit at organizing events. So if any group organizes an event and wants me to come and speak, I will say yes. For sure. I will just plan something and I'll show up and speak at it for sure. Especially if you're a mosque or a Muslim club, student club. If you want to have a friendly debate or a friendly discussion, or if you want to be a mosque, they'd be like, hey, look, we're Muslims. We're so tolerant. We even have ex-Muslims come speak at our mosque. If you want to, show how tolerant you are, then do that, right? So so if there are any Muslims or Muslim student clubs or anybody like that would be interested to come have me as a co-panelist or something like that, I would be honored to show up.
Bombay asks, do you think that the people who identify themselves under a religion are indirectly endorsing the extreme sides? For an example, a moderate Muslims and ISIS.
Yeah, but yes, they are, but unknowingly. So don't hate them for it, right? So yes, moderate Muslims or moderate whatever, they are endorsing a book that is indefensible. Right, they're giving legitimacy and authority to a book that is used for evil, a book that doesn't deserve no excuses and no protection, a book that endorses slavery, and a book that endorses wife beating, book that endorses rape, a book that endorses torture of people that don't believe in the book. They're providing excuses for all of that, but that's not a good reason for you to hate them. Because they are doing all of that, not on purpose, right? Sure. If they don't want to endorse rape, most Muslims do not like wife beating, and they do not want to endorse wife beating. Most Muslims do not agree with slavery, and they would never wish to endorse anything that endorses slavery. So yeah, even though they are doing it, they are not doing it on purpose. So don't hate them for it.
Can I say one quick thing to back up Armin there for a sec? There's two components. Like if you look at a legal system, at least in Canada, there's two components that need to be taken into consideration whenever you're litigating anything. One is mens rea and one is actus rea. Mens rea is the intention to cause harm, and actus rea is the action that caused the harm. You need to have both present in order to be able to penalize somebody for the harm that they caused. Because something ignorantly. You can have actus rea without mens rea. You can harm somebody without the intent to do so. Mm. It's the intention that is the mitigating factor that needs to be considered, that people exclude because they're so focused on the harm that they don't realize that might not be the intention.
And the counter to that is people are saying that, good intention doesn't, the road to hell is paved with a good intention. Yeah, we're not saying that people with good intention don't cause harm. We're actually acknowledging that people with good intention could cause harm. But we're saying it's not, but the intention does matter. Because you have to if you want to solve a problem, you have to understand the intentions. We're not saying good intentions always lead into good results. We're actually saying the exact, we're actually acknowledging that that's not always the case. But taking the intention into consideration, it will lead you into coming up with better solutions. If you blame people for things that they did not intend it, if you demonize people for things that they did not intend it, that's not the most effective solution to the problem.
Okay. Violently Brantley, when are they going to get to the super chats? We just did. RPG gamer guy. Just people who we should have a disconnection with. It's the dangerous ideologies that religion spreads. We should have a disconnection with. Beverly Brantley, love you. Love you two the most of all. Shane says, no, you. Issa Lekin, your pain is my bucks, Kyle. Thank you. My unfinished journey. I'd love to hear Armin's story. Trillian says, cheers to you at Nonsec. Keep up the great work. Thank you very much. And let me, I think there's one more. Let's see. Oh, no, there's three more. Oh man. Conminant Nugent says, passive aggressive, typical Christian response. True, screw that jerk. I think that was to you, Pragmatic Culture. Taliesin.
Poor Prag.
And in Jenna, can we enjoy Cinnamon Toast Crunch? You should be able to enjoy Cinnamon Toast Crunch everywhere. I actually have
that's not food
right here on display. S Winger Shannon, Dave, I'm not getting Shannon a connection. I'm not getting a connection from Shannon. Can we reset her link? S Winger says, let's start a religion. Don't believe in what we say. Let's start a religion. We can blind our eyes with faith. Dance, Gavin, dance, inspire the liars. Perfect. Well, that was fascinating. I would like to thank Armin once again for stopping by, and my lovely co-host Shannon, as always, a pleasure to have you here, and we look forward to your chat with Rand Campbell.
What is
anything you got? I'll send you the date next week. I'm putting the calendar together either today or tomorrow. Do either of you have anything that you'd like to plug or promote before we close out?
I have a channel. It's called Shannon Q. You can subscribe to it. It's awesome. I think it's the best channel in the world, including Nonsec. It's significantly better, objectively better than this channel. I want Armin to come back for two reasons. I want to watch him debate somebody, and I need everybody to hear his story. Holy Cooley did a video where I saw his whole story.
Oh, yeah. And also Seth Andrews as well. Beej mentioned in live chat. Seth Andrews as well. Yeah, Holy Cooley, where is he? I miss him. Yeah.
Oh, I talked to him all the time.
By the way, Seth Andrews is so. Can I mention how much I love Seth Andrews? He's like the largest atheist podcast in the world, and he constantly promotes and supports us little people. Like I don't know, like he's so great. He's so amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also shout out to Drew and. Also,
I can't allow that.
Oh, Cosmic. Oh, by the way, Cosmic Skeptic did an interview with me for his. I was the first for his podcast. He's having a podcast coming out. Yeah, so I'm going to be on his first episode. I'm going to be the first episode of his podcast. Who else? Oh, Beej and Christy in the live chat. I miss you both. By the way, Beej, I don't know if you guys know Christy. I can see she's an admin here. Great choice of an admin. Beej is also should be an admin. She's great.
Beej is fantastic. I interact with Beej constantly. She is a super fan of everybody.
Make her admin.
If you'll comment, I will. Kyle
did it.
I will dub you with a wrench, Beej, if you tag me in the chat. Okay, guys.
Drew is saying in the live chat, if you didn't shout me out, I would have put you in the oven, Armin.
But he loves you.
Oh, by the way, shout out to us as well, Atheist Republic. Check out our YouTube channel. Become a member at atheistrepublic.com. And also, I also have to correct this because a lot of people like always saying, oh, Armin, great job at Atheist Republic. Atheist Republic, there's so many people responsible for Atheist Republic. I just started it, right? So I always have to remind people that I don't deserve all the credit, right? Atheist Republic is so huge that is way more, and it goes into so many different directions that, you know, people are like, oh, some of it is completely out of my control. Some of it is very left wing. Some of it is very right wing. So it's a beast of its own. But there's a lot of people responsible for it. Allie Jackson, shout out to her. So we have more than 200 volunteers there. So, and a lot of times they post stuff that people don't like, But given that they are volunteering their time, all I have to say to them is thank you.
Perfect. Well, guys, we'll be back tomorrow. Make sure that you you subscribe to check out the Atheist Republic and subscribe to Shannon Q. Their links will be in the descriptions once we close out of here. And I've just I just added the link for Genetically Modified Skeptics video that he did as well, and you can check check that out. And we'll be back here tomorrow. At yes, sir.
Oh, Matt Rose is mentioning secular. Matt Rose is a secular jihadist fan. Shout out to our podcast with Ali Rizvi, secular jihadist as well. Sorry, I usually give shout out to other people.
You don't have time for all of this. you do too much, Armin. I just gave you need a podcast for Armin's shit.
A rich. You are.
I just want to make sure I don't piss anybody off by not mentioning them.
Sure.
No, I
all right, guys. We'll be back tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and we'll be taking your calls like we did last Friday. That seemed to work very well. So if you have any questions or people, we're looking for people who disagree with us mostly to call in. It went well, so we will see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Have a good Friday.
Bye. Love you.